Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, national champions, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. And now, here is your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, photos, videos, tales of strange Ulysses. See, that was a Cream reference.
What?
At facebook.com/ballisticradio. Co-hosting with me, Danger Pixie Actual, Melody Lauer.
Hello.
So you're not a fan of the 70s supergroup Cream?
Never heard of her.
I don't know that we can still be friends.
Oh, well, in that case, I'm just going to pack everything up right now, and I will see you later.
I didn't say that you couldn't work for me. Mm. I'm just saying we couldn't be friends, you know? So
wow.
It was a British rock power trio consisting of drummer Ginger Baker, guitarist, singer Eric Clapton. You may have heard of him.
I have heard of that name.
And bassist, singer Jack Bruce.
Eric Clapton. Why do I know that name? What does he do now? I mean, he's still a... What? Why are you looking at me like that? Come on.
This segment brought to you by Lucky Gunner and Federal Premium Ammunition. Whether there was a firefight or you do, in fact, want to worry about that little guy, you need more ammo. And when it's time to restock, you can't beat Federal Premium Ammunition at LuckyGunner.com. With a shipping department that's always moving at 88 miles per hour, if I order a case of American Eagle from Lucky Gunner on a Thursday, it's at my doorstep ready to shoot before the weekend starts. Head to LuckyGunner.com today to check out their in-stock lineup of Federal Premium Ammunition. Remember, unless you're on fire or drowning, you can never really have too much ammunition. So joining us today, and I am actually super excited about this because I was harassing him for years, and he always told me no.
It took me once.
Once. Yeah. Do you know why?
Because people like me.
Yeah, and you're way cuter than I am. It's John Murphy. John, how's it going?
John, doing quite well. How are you guys?
Oh, can't complain. So, you've heard of the British power trio Cream before, right?
I certainly have.
Okay, good. So, 2 out of 3 ain't bad.
This doesn't surprise me, and it shouldn't surprise you either.
No, it doesn't surprise me.
Okay, I was just clarifying.
Well, so, one of the things I like about the show is the listeners eventually get to know us over time, and now they're getting to know you better over time, and I think that's awesome. I'm sorry, John, I interrupted your introduction, and I apologize.
Nah.
You know, I gotta tease Melody just a little bit.
Absolutely.
Who are you, and what do you do? And then I will give my 2 cents on whatever you say, because I bet you undersell yourself.
I'm John Murphy. I am the owner and lead instructor of FPF Training in lovely Culpeper, Virginia. I work in the Department of Defense and got about 2 years up before retirement. And I'm just a guy has discovered an aptitude and maybe perhaps a life's calling. And just getting the right people, the right skills to take care of themselves.
So it's funny because Melody and I were talking before the show, and I actually used the word calling to describe something we were talking about for you. So it just makes me pleased as punch that you said that. But so you were interesting to me for a couple of different reasons, but I get a lot of people that ask me, you know, like, well, if I could only take one class, you know, I can only take one. I've never quite understood why you can only take one, but you know, I like thought exercises too, I guess. So, like, I can only take one. Which class should I take? And I actually think that you have the absolute best of any that I've seen, and I've seen a lot, one-day inclusive pistol self-defense classes in existence. So, but, I mean,
well,
you could say that, but it would sound weirder coming from you than it does from me, I guess. So I won't begrudge it to you.
I appreciate the compliment and the perspective. I take it every class I teach, I go from the perspective of this is the last or perhaps only class this person's ever going to take.
Mm-hmm.
So consequently, I take a kind of a Neapolitan approach to it, and not like I'm from Naples, but like a Neapolitan scoop of ice cream. I have to cut across a spectrum of skills just deep enough to give someone a frame of reference to get them through that moment.
Right.
It expands the hard skills of load, unload, reload, reduce malfunctions, perform a concealed draw stroke, and marksmanship. And then the soft skills of, well, as what Craig has now popularized the term as, of managing the unknown contact. Or how do I interact with law enforcement in a strenuous or not post-event environment, or just a plain old car stop?
Right. So I guess what I'm interested in, and then we'll get more in depth on the class, but so you have a military background, as anyone that has ever spent more than
5 seconds.
I was actually going to say two. As far as can someone thin slice this information?
Oh,
I think they only need two.
Marine.
Yeah.
Through
So what's interesting to me, though, is that you come from a military background. It has made its way into several aspects in your life. As far as you're one of the most organized class hosts I've ever run into, and you're one of the most organized instructors I've ever run into as far as keeping a time schedule and things like that.
He's the only person I know who actually uses the term strict military fashion, and he's being very serious in a civilian context.
Yeah. But what's cool to me, though, and this is kind of the point, the reason I bring it up, your class is not really based off of military stuff at all. In fact, it's one of the better civilian context classes I've seen. What do you think, or why do you think, you were able to separate the two different worlds, I guess, as far as how you teach? Does that make sense? That was a rambling question.
No, it was actually pretty salient, I thought. From the earliest memories, I was going to serve in the military.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to fight a war. And that war didn't happen, but the methodology of preparing for a particular, I was going to fight the Soviet Union, the Russian hordes in the Volga Gap.
Right.
Well, I just applied the same methodology, the same thought process to, well, how do I handle two people in a diner? It's kind of a micro war approach. I also kind of look at, from a perspective of, military aviation.
Right.
For problem solving and recognition and processes. I just had to downscale things appropriately, which isn't to say that dealing with those two people in a diner is the same as defending against a motorized rifle regiment. But ultimately, a lot of the tasks kind of translate once you're appropriately scaled.
So why do you think, and that's kind of interesting, and that's
Tell us more, John.
Yeah, no, I want to hear more about that. But I guess my question is, because I've been to a lot of classes that were taught by military dudes, and they were amazing classes that had quite a bit of useful information for people that were, doing direct action stuff or long range rifle engagements. But they were not contextualized into the civilian world. So
those were largely shooting classes.
Right. Right.
And for those guys, and God love them, each and every one, they roll onto an objective, and they work under the principle of sovereign immunity, and they had the full faith and credit of the United States government supporting their actions.
Right.
And they work shooting in those classes. I look at this as kind of more like a compound exercise for us.
Okay.
Because we have to live in this environment. We have to comply with our laws. We have to recognize that the legal system is not necessarily a justice system. And we have to be cognizant of that. Our application of force has to be very judicious. And if we can avoid the confrontation or the situation in its entirety, that's a huge win for us. Those guys are paid to locate, close with, and destroy.
Yep. Yep.
And that is nowhere near our mission statement.
Well,
I just want to be a citizen that goes home and I keep my health and my wealth intact.
Right. Right. And it seems like that, you know, there's not, I mean, there's a few, and I know some of them, and I mean, you've seen our class, so I guess I'll lump us in there too, but it doesn't seem like there's as many instructors as I would hope there would be that draw that distinction between the different environments. Why do you think that is?
It's the market, I think. First off, people, it's difficult to tell, to sell someone what they need to know versus what they want to know.
Mm-hmm.
And boy, you know, clearing that plate rack in 1.5 seconds, that's great skill set. But it's a skill devoid of context. And people are not really appreciative of the back end, the context part.
Right.
Of pre-existing circumstances. What do I do, you know, before? How do I prepare? If my goal is to apportion time for people so that they can make informed decisions through the whole spectrum of the requirements, starting with a severe, well, I won't use the term severe, a deep questioning of your, you know, navel gazing of yourself. Why am I choosing this lifestyle?
Well, hold that thought. Hold that thought, John, because we got to go to break. So we'll pick right back up. We're talking with John Murphy. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s and scatterguns since 1977. A legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories, as well as the new EDC X9, which offers discriminating shooters 1911 match-grade accuracy, superior ergonomics, and concealability with modern service pistol capacity and reliability at www.wilsoncombat.com. I'm sorry I interrupted you for the break, but what you were saying right before we left was that the first thing that people needed to do was start with introspection. And you said severe navel gazing, but introspection.
Just as deep as possible. I mean, you are requiring the means to end the life instantly.
Right.
It's a highly consequential event. And you have to be fully cognizant of why am I doing this? What is motivating me to adopt this lifestyle? And you have to act ultimately devoid of ego within the confines of the law. And I'm all about exercising my rights. And in fact, when I think about it, decades ago, that's probably kind of how I started this path, down this pathway. Subsequently, I've realized that, well, there's a whole lot of shooting, to your point, there's a whole lot of shooting classes going on up there, and that's great, but we're not often attacked by by plate racks.
Right.
Humiliated, yes. Attacked, not so much.
Mm-hmm.
And if we look at how we apportion our time for an 8-hour class, a 10-hour class, a 2-day class, it has to look at the whole spectrum of skills required to be what I term an effective armed citizen.
Mm-hmm. So, was there any particular point for you where you're like, aha, everyone else is doing it wrong, and I have found, or and you're not really that kind of person in my experience, but do you know what I mean though? As far as, was there a moment where you're like, wait a second, this doesn't make sense?
I had an aha moment and a force-on-force session probably about 12 years ago at a place called NTI. It was during one of the weekend workups for the actual National Tactical Invitation. And some friends and I, we all rented a van, and we drove up there. And I was like, oh, man, I'm gonna get in these scenarios. And I'm just going to, like, whip that pistol out. And I'm going to go to work. I'm going to get it done.
Mm-hmm.
And then I was thrust into a scenario. It was a simple, give me $10. And the role player had his hand in his jacket. And I was flummoxed. Utterly, this was not what I was expected to see.
Right.
And I had to, you know, it was the whole I'll just shoot him fallacy slapped me across the face. And I thought, there's a whole lot more to this than I've been working on. And I've been very fortunate to have encountered my own personal training pathway, to have encountered people to have facilitated much of where I am today.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also realized that from a business perspective, I have to do some kind of differentiation. Because there are all kinds of excellent shooting classes going on out there. And these people, the former tier operators, or the competitors, each of them bring real perspective to that skill. But it ultimately, though, that is a skill devoid of context. And if we look at things from a perspective of I have to apportion time, if I'm a match shooter, a competitor, boy, getting that reload down to 0.8 seconds is pretty crucial for me.
Right.
In our world, that competitor can sit there and do that dry fire exercise and achieve that metric, that standard, where we have to apportion time between, the job. I practice putting tourniquets on occasionally. We look at a lot of things from an outcome-based perspective rather than from a time-based perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a wide spectrum of skills that we have to exercise. In some regards, it's kind of like being a police officer, but without the law enforcement perspective.
Right.
I got to know how to shoot. Yes, I do. I need to know how to talk to people. I need to know how to keep my own ego in check. I need to have the self-discipline to pull my head out of my phone and look around occasionally at what the hell is happening around me. There's just a lot to the armed lifestyle than that 1.4 second concealed draw and that 0.2 second split.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, and I'm certain, and to clarify, because I know there's going to be some people that listen to that and go, wait a second. You're not saying that if you have the time to work the shooting skills to that point and still not neglect other areas, I mean, by all means, you're just saying that maybe don't neglect it, everything else to exclusion, if self-defense is your end goal?
That's exactly my perspective on that. If you've got the time to apportion to that sort of thing, that's lovely, but at some point, life is going to intervene.
Mm-hmm.
And at that point, you're going to have to start apportioning the time you have available across low-density, high-impact skills, like that 0.8-second reload,
right,
versus the reality of, geez, I need to know how to operate, use my med kit. I need to read a couple of things. I need to watch a few videos on active self-protection on YouTube to get my head straight on what this is actually going to look like. And that's all time that competes for our attention, those requirements.
Right. Do you think that, let's back up a second, because I know that, because I've spoken with you, and you remind me of several things that I don't like to think about, and that I'm sure that you are very aware of as well. But when you say that you need to keep your own ego in check, are you saying that from a place of experience, or is that observation of other issues that people run into, or both?
It certainly is both. I like to maintain that calm, cool demeanor, though sometimes I'll engage in affectations to make a point. For instance, we had at my place of work, we had a big meeting regarding promotions.
Mm-hmm.
And there were people sitting at the table. And I got up to go talk to a colleague. I came back, someone had taken my chair at the table. And because I was there to advocate for my people, and it was almost a tribal moment.
Uh-huh.
I had to say, wait a minute, this is Dave. He's one of the finest human beings I know. I gotta step back from this. And we both laughed it off later.
Right.
In other circumstances, parking lot or parking spot disputes. That's when you're interacting with other people, there can be two perspectives to an issue. And having that ability to take a step back and rationalize, well, wait, I am armed. Somebody has to adult here.
Mm-hmm.
And I need to swallow this and disengage and walk away.
Right. Right.
And the natural level of self-consciousness, people will get can get very righteous very quickly, and overly assertive to the point where we're not de-escalating.
Well, I think it's kind of goes back to what you were saying before, and John and I have had conversations about this, and other people have as well. You said before that the legal system isn't necessarily a justice system, and how people's own sense of morality, and I've had conversations with this with my students, where just because you have felt morally violated, and your particular brand of morals say that this is unacceptable, does not mean that it is legally justifiable for you to use any level of force, much less use a higher level of force. So, you know, I like that you're making that distinction between kind of what you morally feel like being violated, or and then checking that against the legal system. I think there needs to be more of that within the industry.
And a prime example of that came from a shooting in a theater about, gosh, 3.5 years ago in Florida.
Yep.
Yep.
With the retired police officer. And during the previews, a gentleman was texting before the movie started. And this guy, that whole, how dare you violate the sanctity of the movie theater, put your phone away, conversations, the guy got up, went back, complained to management, came back to the same seat, and escalated it to the point where there was a physical confrontation, which resulted in one shot being fired and someone being dead.
Right.
All over some a very silly circumstance. And ultimately, during his interview, the gentleman that fired the shot said, if I had it all to do over again, we would have moved.
Mm-hmm.
But something kept him anchored in that chair, and it was pride,
mm-hmm.
and moral outrage. I experienced this myself several years ago. Well, gosh, more than several now. I was taking a language class.
Well, let me because we're going to have to go to break again in like 10 seconds. So we'll start right from there, and that way I don't have to interrupt an amazing story that I've heard before. So we're talking with John Murphy. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Defense, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Defense, lighter, stronger, better. This segment brought to you by Surefire. Know your target and what is beyond it. But how can you really know your target? By shining a really bright light at it, and that's where Surefire comes in. From the new 1200 lumen EDCL 2T handheld or 500 lumen EDCL 1T handheld to the 1000 lumen XH35 or 300 lumen XC1B, Surefire can make sure you never have to yell Aziz light ever again. Now, with more lumens and improved switching, the best just got brighter. Surefire. And as a special offer to Ballistic Radio listeners, you can get 20% off everything at the Surefire.com web store, except batteries and suppressors, by entering the discount code AZIZLIGHT, that is AZIZLIGHT, no space. Anyway, we're talking with John Murphy, and I'm sorry that I interrupted, John. You were saying there were, a number of years ago, you were taking a language class.
Yes, Persian Farsi in our nation's capital, downtown District of Columbia. And I left the class, and I was walking back to my truck. It was dark now at that time, and in my mind, I was conjugating the Persian verb to see, and going to the past perfect, you know, honorific, etc. And I was kind of out of it for a few moments, and I came to consciousness in time to see two gentlemen in the sidewalk in front of me, one facing away and one facing me, and they're holding a very loud, animated conversation, using a lot of profanity, which I've now come to understand is a technique they use to ramp themselves up, as well as to kind of repel people to look away from them. Well, as I was walking toward them, the gentleman that was facing me nodded his head. The guy that was facing away turned around and looked at me. And that was movement associated with my arrival onto the scene. That is a definite pre-incident indicator. I thought, holy cow, this is it. And I had a moment, I was flush with recognition.
Right.
And right. I never experienced any real apprehension because I thought, oh, that, eureka, I know what this is. And I prepared for that moment, and I continued walking toward them. As I came up upon them, I swung out to the right. One of the two, probably the guy was trying to face away, reached out. I think he was trying to grab my collar, spin me around, and shake me down. He got me on the jacket. I knocked his arm off my briefcase, backed away from them, and stood these two down. And they both looked at me, then they looked at each other, and he looked at me, and the one guy said, "Damn, little man, we just wanted to talk." And I said, "I got nothing for you," and I went on about my way. And I woke up the next morning shaking, realizing how stupid I was. because I had, a good 6 or 7 steps to do anything but walk down that sidewalk toward them. But I got angry. I begged the conflict. Now, next week at class, I mentioned, "Hey, did anyone see those two guys?" And this young lady, a longtime resident in the district, she said, yeah, I saw them. I crossed the street." And that is actually the winning answer.
Right. Right. So.
And John's all, "I wish someone would."
No.
No, I'm not kidding. But
which John, me or him? Or both
no,
of us?
No, I'm saying John Moore. That's confusing when we've got a John as a guest and
right.
a John as a host.
Yeah. I don't think it's so much a, and I'd like to get your opinion on this, but I can speak to incidents that I've been involved in. It's kind of like you said. It's like I recognize what's going on, and I recognize what I can do to prevail in this situation. And I personally am somewhat competitive, which anyone who knows me is a lie. I am all the competitive. And it kind of becomes a, well, you know, I want to do good at this. And if you haven't, do you think if you haven't really, really ingrained, how bad winning a self-defense counter, I mean, it's
can be, yeah,
it's better than losing one. I'm not saying that it's not, but like winning one's bad too, right?
There's nothing so terrible as a battle lost as a battle won.
Mm-hmm.
That's a kind of a quote from an old British general. There's a lot to be said for that. There are legion cases where people have defending themselves, been prosecuted, and ultimately won in court, but at terrific personal cost. Financially drained, marriages fall apart, the whole nine yards. So ultimately, it has to be worth it. And I think the term we're walking around here now is preclusion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
If there are things that we can undertake, just using rules from general aviation, see and avoid, well, then that goes a long way to that that unobtrusive, unnoticed lifestyle that we ultimately all want.
Right.
However, at the root of it, the very core, we will retain the capacity for instantaneous, overwhelming counter violence. So that option is available, and it's a viable option. It's an option fraught with consequence, but ultimately, I think it's a it's a moral imperative, I mm-hmm. think.
Well, and it seems like, let me ask you this. Do you think the problem or the thing that people run into is that the vast majority of human beings, like normal, average human beings, have to work themselves up emotionally to be overwhelmingly violent, whereas really for me at least, it's just like, cold, dispassionate violence on demand is the end goal, if necessary, you know?
A lot of that, that's an excellent point. And I think a lot of it has to come from within, back to that self-assessment. And then if you use a little bit of a science on this, and recognition-based decision modeling or recognition-primed decisions, if you have witnessed vicariously via a YouTube channel or whatever, or role-playing, force-on-force, if you witnessed pre-violence indicators, and you can build yourself up, and I hate to use the term triggered, if you can build these triggers up and delineate boundary lines with action points. That goes a long way to overcoming what our friend John Hearn refers to as the orienting response.
Yep.
And if we can defeat or minimize our orienting response, we can launch a counterattack in such a timeline as to, well, our adversaries are not going to see it coming. As our friend and mentor Tom talks about, if you can get two or three what the F's out of a guy, you are sufficiently in his decision action loop to the point where you can prevail.
And it seems like people sort of overlook that. It doesn't necessarily take a whole bunch to get those what the F's. And thank you for censoring yourself, because those fines are really just a pain. But and it seems like people try and overcomplicate that a bit.
I think you're right. A couple of hurdles I've encountered in that regard is it's a tactic. If you engage with someone verbally to cause them to use their cognition process to limit their responses, well, that's an awesome tactic, and it doesn't take much to learn it, but there's not much, well, frankly, there's not much sex to it. You can't put a timer on it, per se. It's one of those outcome-based skills that you can't really quantify.
Mm-hmm.
It's also largely unappreciated, because we're back to those the shooting instructors. They're all about that finished product, and we're all about setting conditions and circumstances. I guess what we're trying to delineate here is the difference between time and timing. The time it takes for me to accomplish a task, fire a concealed a control pair of concealment. We can quantify that, and that is a solid number. That is a skill that we can then incorporate into our planning. The timing involved in when I actually exercise that skill, well, that is kind of like, I think, the synthesis.
Right.
And that's what I'm working toward.
Well, and that's something that, unfortunately, how do you know if you got the timing right? Well, you're still here. And if you didn't get the timing right, well, sorry.
It's the ultimate pass-fail event. And the best way to rehearse things like this, obviously, is force on force.
Mm-hmm.
For my roadshow class this year, I'm incorporating a lot of verbal de-escalation type stuff. Melanie loves it when I do this. I'm going to yell at people.
I do. It's amazing.
Use language and whatnot. There are, as a stressor to induce and to keep people like from getting too involved. Maintaining that detachment and maintaining their options. If they can achieve disengagement, that's fine. And if they can't, and it escalates to that point, well, then they'll have options there as well. And we're also talking about kind of a socially asocial type violence, if we can use those constructs. If we recognize that there are various types of situations, violence that we can face, and we need kind of a spectrum of skills to apply. And the first one, of course, is to recognize which one you're confronted with.
Well, hold that thought, because it's break time again. We're flying right through this, but we're talking with John Murphy. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio, brought to you by Daniel Vance, the country's leading manufacturer of AR rifles and accessories. Daniel Vance, lighter, stronger, better. We're talking with John Murphy, and I interrupted you, John, and I'm sorry that I had to do that. Please don't hurt me the next time we see each other. Please continue.
John, you got to pay the bills.
Yeah, I know, right?
We have to understand, back to the varieties of violence we can face, it can come with warning and without warning. Generally, violence is associated with rules. Leave now, or I'm going to kick your butt.
Mm-hmm.
It can start over like, you're looking at my girlfriend kind of thing. That's my parking spot. There's obviously a lot of room there for de-escalation opportunity. And then there's the predatory-type violence. Where that can come with rules as well. Give me your money or I'm going to kill you. Again, and there are all kinds of precursors there. And then, of course, now we're encountering well, definitely antisocial violence from whatever perspective you want to call it. Multiple assailants, heavily armed, very committed. And that is definitely at the very pinnacle of what an armed citizen can face. And it's already kind of, if you choose to accept the incident in Tennessee from a couple of years ago, the attack on the military recruiting station there, that would be an example of that. Though it was military people involved, it was a handgun versus a rifle.
Right.
And it was a 35-yard shot in a very high-stress environment.
Right.
And it was just the absolute nightmare scenario.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's funny, too, because it seems like there's extremes on either end. There's, well, you know, stuff like that never happens, so blah, 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 so I'm not going to practice for it. And then the other end is, well, I'm only going to practice for the, you know, that. And there kind of has to be a middle ground, don't you think? Or no? Does it depend?
There certainly does. There needs to be a time apportionment. I like to do about 20% of my range work. I like to step out to 25 yards, and you know, because I've got a facility and beyond.
Right.
To, you know, the skill is hit at distance. And then when you introduce a moving target at distance, it becomes profoundly humbling at that stage. And yet, that is low likelihood, high impact event. You'll be facing someone, if they're armed with a rifle, you are in a significant ballistic disadvantage.
Yeah.
He's got 30 rounds in the magazine. You've got like 15.
Mm-hmm.
His rifle has a much longer sight radius, much easier to hit, and not to mention the ballistic efficiency terminally at the very end. And yet, it translates. If you look at it, to hit at that distance, you need to work the trigger very finely. You need excellent sight refinement, and you need to be able to shoot from a variety of positions because you don't want to stand up and go toe to toe with this guy from behind cover, at least going prone.
Right.
But that trigger and sight focus, that comes into play also pretty much through our spectrum of shooting from, like, you know, as you know, 5 yards and out anyway. So there's utility to be found there. Again, it's back to that time apportionment. Time is money, ammunition expenditure. And is that time you'd be better spent working on applying chest seals and maybe attention pneumothorax release and tourniquet application? It all depends on how people assess their lives and their own risk, potential assessment.
Well, it seems like, too, in a situation like that, knowing your own level of skill is pretty important. For me personally, I know that if I can identify a threat visually at any distance, I can hit it with a handgun. But that's, you know, for me, that's a pretty long ways. Not everyone can do that, though. And knowing where your own skill level lies is sort of, it goes back to the beginning of what you said, that introspection and even introspection during the entire journey.
Well, we talked about my military upbringing and the Marines, and one of the tenets of leadership for Marine Corps traits and principles is know yourself and seek self-improvement.
Mm-hmm.
So if you know yourself, like, holy cow, that's a 35-yard shot. There's people around here. I can't make it. As armed citizens, we are not compelled to evolve ourselves with that. That might be a time to execute that treadmill skill you've been working on. And escape and evade.
Right.
You also have to divorce yourself from the ego of, like, okay, I can make that 35-yard shot on my range without bullets snapping past my head.
Mm-hmm.
Can I put myself into this bubble and make this happen?
Yeah.
That's a sincere, severe come-to-Jesus moment. And I think being I won't call it overconfident, but having a realistic expectation of your skill set would be very beneficial at that moment.
Right.
Because then you can exercise those options.
Well, and let me ask you this, and this is sort of, and we're coming up on the end of the show, so I'll ask you one question that I want to talk about where people can come take a class with you. There is a very large difference between an attack motivated by ideology and an attack motivated by, and people, I'll just use the term mental illness for clarity's sake in this moment, as far as the level of dedication of the attacker and how much it takes to stop them, isn't there?
Absolutely. I mean, if you are fighting someone, as we have learned these past 17 years or so, whose goal in life is to die in the service of the religion, well, that is a profound motivation.
Yeah.
And these people are not going to take a few hits or take a few shots and run away. They are committed to the cause. And we have seen this time and again. And they're willingness to commit mayhem and mass murder, the Pulse nightclub, for instance,
mm-hmm.
The bomb, marathon bombing, as another example of what they're willing to do to make their point. And whichever that event or that motivation you choose to look at, again, the Chattanooga recruiting station, Fort Hood, they're dying in the service of the religion is their highest calling.
Right.
And that is just a profound motivation, profound. And that cuts across the whole spectrum. I'm not going to – it's obviously one much more than the other of late, but history shows us that could go
– multiple directions. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So if people want to take a class with you or would like to take a class that you're hosting, or where can they find you on the interwebs?
Well, I am at www.fpftraining.com. And by the way, FPF does not stand for Final Protective Fires. It stands for Front Sight Press Follow Through.
Nice.
People tend to associate that with my military time. I have a range in Culpeper, and I teach in Northern Virginia. I'm going on the road this year. I've got Terre Haute in a couple of weeks. I'll see you and Melody at TACON here shortly.
Mm-hmm.
I'm with Lee Weems in Athens, Georgia. I've got Idaho, Iowa, a couple runs in Texas. My website delineates my local classes, my national classes, and the classes I host locally. And I like to think of myself, Tam taught me a word, Zaibatsu. And I have a conglomerate of people I have come in to teach these skill sets that I think are most important. And when Tam told me that word, Zaibatsu, I'm like, yes, of course, Zaibatsu. They had to run off to Google, like, what the hell does she mean by that? And it's a Japanese business conglomerate of like-minded people with similar goals.
Nice.
And that's, I think, what this generation, as I say this at almost 56, it's laughable, this generation of instructors is departing from the past generations where people were much more insular. This generation, we pass people, students off back and forth all the time.
Yeah.
And I think it's great.
Well, I mean, and you know, theoretically, and I want people to realize it, and I don't look at it this way, but I could see where someone might look at it. You know, we both teach very context-based handgun classes. If you were dumb, and I really do think it would be dumb to think this, we would technically be competitors. And I don't feel that way at all. I really, and what I really like about you, like I said, if I had to pick between people only taking our class or only taking your class, I think your class is a better, stronger, all-inclusive one-day class. So I cannot recommend the people enough. If you have the opportunity to train with Murphy, go and do it. But John, thanks so much for taking time out of your day to talk to us. I appreciate that Melody was finally able to convince you. You know,
she overwhelmed me. I couldn't help myself.
Well, yeah, she's that way sometimes. So. Hey, be safe, brother. I will see you at TACON, and I will see you out in Culpeper in April as well. And it's always a pleasure, man. Thank you again.
Likewise. Thank you very much.
All right. Enjoy your day. Hey, guys, make sure you check out our website, BallisticRadio.com. Like our Facebook page at Facebook.com/BallisticRadio. And keep leaving those 5-star review on iTunes. It really helps us out. We really appreciate it. And thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe. See you next week.